Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. So I'm going to tell you a secret. I don't know if you're ready for this. You might want to prepare yourselves. Okay, I'm sick. That's the secret. But this is not my normal foolishness. I have something going on inside. Some kind of scratchy throat nonsense. So if you want to skip work tomorrow, just let me know and I'll cough on you. Okay, you'll do great. But because of that, and because things have been rough lately, I really needed to sleep in Saturday morning and yesterday morning. And I did. And I was shocked that I did. I woke up and the sun was actually up. And this seemed unfair to me. Something was off. Something was wrong. And it wasn't that I hadn't set my alarm. I normally don't set my alarm whenever I need to sleep in. It was that the biological alarm didn't wake me up. Because normally at 4:30 a.m., Shadow is in my face, pawing and clawing me to get up, okay? And if I don't get up, claws come further and further. I wake up looking like I've been mugged. And then if I still don't get up, the paw goes in my mouth. And so, very upset. And I throw him to Abbeville, and then he comes running back to try and get me up. But there was no Shadow in my face Saturday morning. I was like, I turned over and opened the window to my little catio there, and Shadow just ran outside. Didn't even go looking for food. I'm like, something's wrong here. Okay. And sure enough, I go to the food, and I keep it in one of those big storage bins, and the lid to the bin was open. And I'm like, oh, you jerk. Okay. Somebody broke into the food. But then I was stuck, because there's Ghost crying and complaining. And I knew I needed to feed Ghost, but if I only fed Ghost, Shadow would eat half of Ghost's food, and then, you know, Ghost would get less. So I had to feed them both, and so Shadow got fed twice, which is absolutely ridiculous. However, and the reason I'm telling you this story, aside to amuse you, is because I realized that it was a wonderful illustration of the relationship between distributive justice and commutative justice. Okay. Because you see, distributive justice is what I was doing. I am king in the rectory. I am the state. And I have to distribute to them as they need. And I knew that even though Shadow would get more than he deserved, if I didn't give Shadow what he wanted, Ghost would not get what he deserved. So I had to make a decision. But that decision was based on the fact that Shadow and Ghost would not be fair to each other. Right? And that's commutative justice. If I could have trusted Shadow to say, you know what, man, I've had my fill today, Ghost, you can eat your food, then I wouldn't have had to feed him twice. But my cats are wicked, wicked things, so I couldn't trust them. But that relationship between authority distributing to society versus our relationship to each other is the difference between distributive and commutative or commutative justice. Merriam-Webster actually says you can pronounce it both ways, which was not helpful to me. Okay. And it's that second part that I want to talk about today. It's not our last homily on justice. We did three on the other three cardinal virtues and then three on justice itself. And today's gospel is rich in teaching about commutative justice, very rich. And it has more than that too, and I'll get to that. But if you talk about commutative justice, what you're talking about is being fair to one another on a local level, on a personal level. And most of that, I think people get instinctively. It's one of the first things we learn as kids. You got to be fair. Don't cheat. Don't lie. Don't try to, you know, con somebody out of things. We know this. This is reality. And there's so many aspects of commutative justice, but they all fall under what we call the golden rule, right? Which is what Jesus tells us today. Do to others as you would have them do to you. And do to others as you would have them do to you. That's a law. It's basic, right? And he goes further. He says, right? Stop judging and you'll not be judged. Stop condemning and you'll not be condemned. Forgive and you'll be forgiven. The measure with which you measure will be measured out to you. There needs to be a balance, a fairness, a justice. And we get that. There are three areas that I'm going to touch on quickly that I think that we get that less than we used to. I think in most areas, everybody understands you're supposed to be fair. But in my, you know, view of society, which is so profound, he says ironically, there are three issues that I think we've kind of lost the bead on today. And the first is honor, what Thomas calls honor. We normally call it respect. Okay, that people have a right to respect. This is not just being nice, it's not just being kind. They have a just right to honor, to respect. And involved in all that is, of course, what we've talked about with gossip, right? People have a right to their good name. You can't go around telling people things that destroy somebody's good name, even if you're, oh, but it's true. It doesn't matter, okay? People have a right to their good reputation. You can't be stealing that from them. Now, you can, like, vent to a spouse and tell them, make sure it doesn't get past this. Or you can report to the police if they've committed a crime. That's not gossip. But going around and just saying things, you know, that destroy somebody's reputation, that's gossip and it's wrong. It's an injustice. And that injustice of a lack of honor, of a lack of respect, gets worse. And this is the thing that I think we've lost the beat on. It gets worse if the person has office. And the higher the office is, the worse the sin of disrespect. We used to know that. We'd say you respect the office, but not the person holding it. But not anymore. Now we think if you have high office, that means that we're going to gossip about you nonstop on Facebook. Okay. And we see that reality of office today in the first reading. Saul is trying to kill David. David sneaks into Saul's tent. Saul is passed out, presumably drunk. Saul was clearly going through some mental issues at this point. And David's companions say, kill him. He's trying to kill you, kill him. And David refuses. Do not harm him, for who can lay hands on the Lord's anointed and remain unpunished? It's not that he's saying Saul's a good guy. It's not that he's saying he likes Saul. It's not that he's saying he agrees with what Saul does. He recognizes that Saul has office, has authority. And that to violate that will be punished by God. I say this, you know, I'm not going to get into the weeds in this, but I say this especially as, you know, our Holy Father, Pope Francis, is struggling greatly with his health. And, you know, it is okay to disagree with somebody in authority about their policies. It's okay to disagree about their decisions. It's okay to express that disagreement online. It is not okay to attack them personally. That's gossip. And the number of people that I've seen saying, pray for him because he's probably going to hell, not okay. Right? Who shall lay hands on the Lord's anointed and not be punished? So that reality that we have to respect somebody for their office, whether it's secular and civil or ecclesial, and that an offense against their honor increases the higher their office is, that's something we've lost sight of. Something we don't really like as Americans, but there it is. The second thing is the sin of usury. We hear today Jesus say, look, even sinners lend to sinners and get back the same amount. The same amount. Even sinners don't charge interest, right? And for a long time, the church talked about the sin of usury, which is charging interest on a loan, at least it was originally. Okay? And people think that the church has given up attacking the sin of usury. She has not. What she understands is this. In today's economy, which was not the truth at the time of Jesus, in today's economy, there are things like inflation. There are things like the fact that you can invest your money instead. There are all these things so that if I gave you $100 and then 20 years later you gave me $100 back, you actually would be giving me less than I had given to you, right? And so the church does say, no, I mean, it makes sense that you can charge a reasonable amount of interest, but exorbitant interest, ridiculous interest, is still the sin of usury, and the Bible condemns that profoundly. Do you want to know what a ridiculous interest rate is? Open your credit card bill. That's a ridiculous interest rate. Okay. And you know I don't talk about politics from the pulpit, but in this case there's a bill that has bipartisan support, being supported by both parties, and I think you should advocate for its pushing. Is there's a law that they're going to try and pass that caps credit card interest rate at 10%, right? That is a good thing. The church would be unanimously behind that, right? An end to usury, right? And this also happens, you know, if you just loan money to your brother-in-law. Don't be like, look, I loaned you $100, now you need to give me a car. Like, this is not, right, this is not how this works, okay? And this is true of all kinds of other things. Yes, there is a legitimate expectation of return, but don't get caught in injurious, ridiculous interest rates because it's the sin of usury. Try to pay off your credit card debt, try to pay off all your debt. Don't let that build, because if you do, if you're just being imprudent about it, you yourself, even though you're kind of the victim, you're participating in that sin of usury. And the last thing connected to this is, you know, that thing we've lost the beat on is contract law. That when you enter into a contract, you are not just legally, you are morally required to fulfill that contract. And that in particular applies to employment. You know, a lot of times people struggle with that. And as a boss, you can ask my employees this. I'm much more focused on getting tasks done than showing up for certain hours, right? And if that's how I evaluate our contract, then that's what it should be. But if your boss, if your contract says you show up for 40 hours of work a week, and you go in there for your 40 hours a week and play Candy Crush the entire time, that is a sin, right? That is a violation of your contract. You cannot steal money from your employer by working, by taking money for work that you're not working. Alternately, employers can't fail to pay you for the work you do, right? They have to pay you. Can't just say, like, are you going to volunteer? Like, no. If it's your work, they have to pay you. The diocese is always very ardent with us about this. This is why we try to block our employees from volunteering at all, right? Because if it's your work, you have to get paid for it. All right, so those are three things where I think we lose sight of commutative justice. There's one other thing that's connected that I'm going to point to that Jesus says. I'm going to say it in passing, where Jesus says, of course, to the person who strikes you on one cheek, offer the other as well. From the person who takes your cloak, do not withhold even your tunic. Why? Because within commutative justice, we can tend to want to seek revenge if someone harms us. And revenge is not justice. Revenge is not justice. So if somebody steals from you, do you go and steal from them instead? No, you report them to the police, right? If somebody murders somebody, do you go and murder somebody in their family? No, you report them to the police. If your husband says a mean word to you, do you refuse to talk to him for the next week? No, you report him to the police. No, okay, look, the reality there is, right, that we can tend, because we're so fixated on fairness, and it's a good thing, we can tend to think, therefore, that when somebody hurts us, we have to hurt them in return for it to be fair. That's not true. And that's what Jesus is saying. He's not saying be a doormat. He's not saying be a victim. He's not saying never seek justice. He's not saying that at all, very clearly. He is saying don't personally seek justice, right? Don't personally seek punishment. That instead it should be something that is part of distributive justice, right? It is the society that punishes as opposed to individuals punishing one another, okay? All right, now this last thing. Because Jesus, rather deliberately, he's a better preacher than me, let's just be clear, rather deliberately mixes all these things together. I'm trying to pull them apart so that you understand them a little bit better. But he is deliberately encouraging us to go past justice. And works that go past justice are called, and this is ridiculous that it's this big of a word for such a simple term, or such a simple reality, they're called works of supererogation. Okay, that's stupid, but there it is. Works of supererogation. And this is when Jesus says, hey, give to everyone who asks you. Does that mean we're obligated to give to everyone who asks us? Is that required, a duty? Jesus says, from the one who takes what is yours, do not demand it back. Is that a requirement? He says in other places, don't invite your family and friends to supper, but invite your enemies to supper. Is that a requirement? No. And how do we know it's not a requirement? Because he says very clearly, he makes the distinction. Pope John Paul II points this out, and so does St. Thomas Aquinas. Look, even sinners do the same. So if you just follow the law of justice, even sinners do the same. Like, this is basic, right? He's saying this is what you should expect to be doing. However, if you go past justice, then your Father who is just will give you a reward in heaven. Okay? And he says that explicitly. What credit is that to you? What credit is that to you? Then your reward will be great and be called children of the Most High. These works of supererogation are threaded all through the church, right? There's what we are required to do, and then there's what we can do over and above that. So Lent's coming. Don't forget. Okay. Now, what are you required to do for Lent? You're required to abstain from meat every Friday. You're required to fast on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. And you're still required to come to Mass on Sunday. You're not required to give anything up. You're not required to do anything extra. You're not required to give up hard candy. Those are works of supererogation. But it's a good thing to do, right? Because it gives you credit in heaven. Or it pays off your debt, right? And that's a good thing to do. And yet, dear brothers and sisters, and this is where I want to be very clear, the reason why we make the decision, well, why not just tell it, just do as much as they can all the time? Because we need to have it clearer in our mind what is our obligation versus what is extra, but still good. Because obligation must come first. If you're like, oh, I don't need to pay off my credit card bills because I've given all my money to the church, no. Obligation must come first. If you're like, look, I can fast every day even though it's destroying my health, no, obligation must come first. You can ask deacons about this because they tell deacons this all the time. If you start ministering in such a way that it harms your family, what are they going to tell you? Pull back and focus on your family because your obligations come first. Okay? You can never make generosity the enemy of justice. Because if you don't do what you're required to do, you'll be punished. If you do over what you're required to do, you'll be rewarded. But if you do over what you're required to do and also default on what you are required to do, then the Lord will look at you with pity, but you'll still be punished. Generosity cannot be the enemy of justice. Okay? And so we need to have that very clear in our mind. Have that clear in your mind in confession, too. When you're like, oh, I'm not as nice as I could be. I am. Okay? Right? But no, there's a reality. There's a difference between what you're required to do and what you could do. It is important to do what you could do, but you have to do you're required to do. And so, dear brothers and sisters, as we approach this Lenten season after these three homilies on justice, I very much encourage you to look in your life. Look at your relationship to God. Look at your relationship to authority in society. And look at your relationship to everyone in your life. Is there any place where you're unrighteous? Is there any place where you're unfair? Is there any place where you've failed in duty or obligation? If so, fix it. Because the time of penance is drawing near. God bless you all.